Welcome to the Sleon Productions podcast. Today we are having our guest, Coach Mick Smith. He is a trainer, he's a strength coach. He used to work for the NBA. And I met him actually at McDonald's, one of my favorite restaurants, actually. And he's a nice guy. I was a nice guy. We connected. And I built his website, and I coached him, you know, him through like the how to get things done digitally. And he is a very big inspiration. He drives a fitness truck, and where he can drive to your house or to your office space, and he can train you in his truck. Everything's there, all the equipment, and it's really affordable. And he has a big heart for sports, and he's been very, very, very authentic, I would say. And Mick, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So Mick, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, right now I started my own business 2 years ago. It's Professional Sports and Fitness Training Incorporated. And I train everybody. I have my youngest client is 14, and my oldest one is actually 83. And I design programs specific for their needs. Could be sports related, could be just getting them to walk better and getting them stronger and have better posture and prevention of injury. It's funny because prevention of injury, if you're an athlete or if you're just a regular person, especially as we get older, the main thing is to have our balance and our strength to prevent a fall. If you happen to fall, you're going to be able to hopefully have enough strength to gain your balance back again. So I've been doing a lot of that, but I have a couple of high schools I teach and coach with their strength conditioning program for basketball. I'm actually pretty busy. I have about 5 clients down at Coral Gables that I train. And I'm an adjunct professor at FIU for their physical education program. And I'm also a dual enrollment supervisor. So I have 3 high schools that I go around in the Broward County and Dade County to have special classes for credit for college. And I keep pretty busy.
Now, you told us that you worked for the NBA. Walk us back. Like, how did you get to the NBA? What was the process?
Well, it again, my background was basketball. I wanted to be a basketball coach. So I kind of parlayed that. And I was an okay basketball player. And as a strength coach, usually a strength coach comes from, usually from a football program. They played football and... because football was the main sport that started strength and conditioning. No other sport had a strength coach. It started with football. But what happened was with the basketball, I was a basketball coach. And then this is when you really weren't supposed to weight train. You know, we're talking way back in the 70s. So you'd have to kind of hide doing your weight training in your basement. Coach wouldn't, they wouldn't let you do that because it's going to throw your shot off if you're a basketball. They wouldn't let you do it for baseball. It's going to throw the accuracy of your arm. So we had to, you know, almost like go into the little weight room that they had or go in your basement, do some things. And otherwise they would get mad at you, say, get out of there. You know, you're going to ruin yourself. So that's what you had. You had to kind of sneak your way around. But I guess just parlayed the background with that. And again, growing up in Lincoln, Nebraska, where everything they had was football. How fast can they run? How high can they jump? And I was just enamored by learning how a person could actually do that and develop a human body. And what happened was I finished my degree at Creighton University. I was actually a strength conditioning graduate assistant with Dr. Tom Beckley at Creighton University. And I went to school at the University of Nebraska in Omaha. So I was able to take my classes at UNO, but apply what I learned in my classes and from Dr. Beckley with the teams there at Creighton. So there were 8 teams at the time, your basic 8 varsity sports in college. And I learned the strength training from there, and I got my master's degree. And then there wasn't a job, you know. I had a couple opportunities. This is way back in 84, when that's when I was ready to finish with my master's. This is when Georgetown won the national championship for basketball. Have you heard of Willis Reed?
No, I have not. Okay. This is back in the 70s?
Yeah, Willis Reed is one of the top 50 best pro basketball players to ever play, big time with the New York Knicks. Mm. And he's a legend. So he was actually the coach at Creighton. And John Thompson, who was the big name for the Georgetown University, he was their coach. He was the head basketball coach with the Olympics that year. And then Willis Reed was his assistant. So Willis came back. He goes, "Hey, Mick, would you like to have a job at Georgetown?" I go, "Are you? Of course, Willis. I'd love to do that. What do I have to do?" And he says, "Well," he goes, "it's a brand new position, and they just won the championship, and George would like to have a strength conditioning coach." I said, "What do I have to do?" He goes, "Well, you have to be the video coordinator. You're going to have to film the practices, and you'll be the conditioning and strength coach for the team." I said, "I'd love to do that." So I thought, wow, this is fantastic. My first love would be basketball. My second love would be strength training. This is perfect for me. But through the budgets, and they decided to wait another year. So I didn't get that job. Next time was Chicago White Sox. And again, to backtrack, I was also known as a baseball guy. So that would have been like my second love. I go, this is crazy. Well, anyway, same thing happened a year later. Well, in the meantime, I graduated with my master's, and I didn't have a job. So I actually went to California with one of my brothers. He had an insurance agency, and I got a license in insurance, going to do that. And then I really wasn't happy at what I was doing. And I remembered when I was in Omaha getting the degree, I saw a board on the wall, and it said, coaching, in all areas of the world. I go, wow, that sounds pretty interesting. It was with the United States Sports Academy. So at that time, I actually took a copy of it. And I always had that like in the back of my mind. So I thought, you know what? Why not? I'm not married. I have nothing to keep me here. So said, what country would you like to coach and live in? So I thought, well, I'd like to have the Far East and the Middle East. My brother-in-law is Egyptian. So I actually went to Egypt a couple of times, visiting my sister, my brother-in-law. And so I had an understanding about the mind and the culture. So I felt comfortable that I could do that. And I actually took the job at Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, for the Royal Saudi Air Force Defense Force Institute. So I trained cadets. I trained soldiers. I started their fitness program, and we also started, there were 15 coaches, started the Olympic program for the country of Saudi Arabia. So I did that. In the meantime, my contract was up. I came back to Omaha, and there's a very famous guy named Jim Henry. He was the Chicago Cubs general manager. He and I were good friends at Creighton. He was the baseball coach at Creighton. His background was Columbus High School. And he says, "Hey, Mick, if you ever want to have a job, high school job, I got a great one down in Miami." And I thought, well, didn't really want to do high school anymore. I already did it a couple of years, but I actually got married in the meantime and decided, well, I'm going to settle down. And if I don't come back to the States, I will kind of lose out. I'll lose my network and see what's going on in my field. So I took the job at Columbus as their strength coach. And I really believed that I could do a great job there at the school, to where they'd have to know my program, they would know me, and I could get a job at the University of Miami working with their team. Well, things happened, and I was very fortunate to where I got the job the very next year. So I was at the University of Miami. I stayed there for 6 years. The Miami Heat came to town. We started training the Miami Heat, and my background with basketball fell right into place again. Bill Foran, who was the head strength conditioning coach at Miami, I was his assistant. So there were only two of us at the time. And we both, we loved all sports, but, that was professional basketball coming right into our backyard. They used the facility. So we were saying, hey, we really should. They didn't lift weights. We said, we really should do some strength training and some conditioning and extra things, because injury prevention and all these things. And it was very, very new. And because we were still fighting our guys, the old stigma of not throwing your shot off when you're lifting your weights and getting stronger. And so Bill ended up getting the head job at the Miami Heat. He is still there today. And I volunteered my time for 3 years with the Heat to open up the door so I could have an interview. And I was able to get an interview with the Portland Trailblazers 3 years later, and then that's what started with me. So it was my first love of basketball and being a coach, and my second love, strength training. So I just parlayed that, and I stayed. I was 3 years with the Heat and 4 years with the Trailblazers, and then 9 years with the Orlando Magic. So that's kind of how it all went on. So
has the whole scheme or techniques of strength conditioning, has it like evolved throughout the years? Have you seen big differences, or it's pretty much the same thing? Or
there's a big difference. I would say probably about 15 years ago, it drastically changed. And, you know, some for the good, some for the bad. I'm a very open strength and conditioning coach. If there's anything new out there that I think is going to be able to apply to make that athlete better, even just a regular person better, I'm going to use it. I'd be a fool not to do that. But I think there are certain things that should be emphasized versus others. For example, 15 years ago, it became more balance-oriented, more core-oriented. Well, back in the day with Fran and I at Miami, back in the 80s, we worked the core. You had two different terms. Core now means core, the midline of the body. Back then, you had your core exercise, your biggest exercise, the squat, the bench, the power clean, something like that. So we always worked the core. We always believed back then the body is from inside out. Well, that's what they're saying now. And but a good strength coach would have done that from the beginning. They would know you just don't work the legs and the chest and this kind of stuff. It's from here and going out, and it requires a lot of balancing. But what has really changed now was increasing the mobility of the body, more flexibility. Even though we thought we were above, we had a really good program. We really did have a good program because we were very advanced and we were really into nutrition 30 years ago. Matter of fact, October 20th, next month, we have our 30-year anniversary for the 1987 National Championship team at Miami. And we're going to go to that because I remember back then at our training table. Training table is when you go to eat. You know, at that time, everybody, all the athletes ate together. What Bill and I did, we had menus. This is 30 years ago. We had menus on the wall of how much was in this food, how much protein, fat, carbohydrates, total calories. So, because we had guys that were, I think at that time, I still have the papers, the time of our average line at that time would be 17% body fat. Those are big linemen. Now, we weren't as big as they are now, but we did have guys close to 300 at the time. You know, 303, 310, but a lot of them were 85, 89, something like that, that were linemen. So we weren't the really big guys, but our guys were fast, and they had great technique, and we would get their body fat down. So we
linemen.
Were, linemen, wow. Yeah.
It feels like those guys are full fat, but I guess.
Yeah, no, but that was our thing. And Coach Jimmy Johnson, you know, everything was speed. We tried to get speed. Even we would have our defensive backs, the safeties, and then we would get a guy that was faster than that guy. That safety is now going to be a linebacker. And the linebacker got bigger, faster, and stronger, and we had faster guys than him, so he became the defensive end. So everything was speed, 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 and that's why they were so overwhelming with teams at the time, because they were big, fast, strong, powerful, and athletic. I mean, just unbelievable. And one thing that it is very, very good, but I think they went overboard on, would be proprioception balance training. Even in the NBA, if you had a young guy that was right out of high school, because back then you could have a guy right out of school. Now they have to have at least, I'm sorry, yeah, 1 year out of college now. But back then, LeBron was a high school kid. My first one was with Jermaine O'Neal with the Portland Trailblazers. He was only 17. So you really have to develop that body. You start with your technique, and you start with some strength, and then you get into more power movements. But I was always a technical coach. I always consider myself a teacher.
You see a difference between a player that was drafted from college and high school. You see like the differences with their bodies, right?
No question. And skill level.
Wow.
Big time. I'll tell you a little story. This is pretty cool. This is when LeBron James was a sophomore. There was a coach with the Orlando Magic named Gary Brokaw. And we just got a workout in, and Gary just got back from a road trip, and he was getting ready to go for another one. I go, "Gary, how's it going out there?" He goes, "Man," he goes, "Mickey, you won't believe it. They're having me look at sophomores now." I go, no way. He goes, stop. Where's this guy? I go, oh, he's in Cleveland. I go, really? I go, what's his name? He goes, some kid named LeBron James. He goes, but he's supposed to be a stud. He goes, but you know, because we're looking at sophomores now. A few days later, he came back. I go, Gary, how was the road trip? He goes, Mick, you wouldn't have believed it. This kid can play right now. He goes, I would have never have believed that, but the kid can play right now. He's that good. He's so physical. He's that developed. And he was, but they don't come. I mean, come on, how many guys like that come around?
Now, which the NBA has taken away that rule. I think you have to go to college for a year.
Yeah, it's a year now. Yeah.
Would you agree?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I know that one of the players that you talk about sometimes with me is Dwight Howard. Tell me, I mean, you had you were there during his rookie season.
I was there his first 2 years. And, you know, the NBA changes a lot of people. You know, money can change a lot of people. I really liked Dwight when I was there. I know I knew him as an 18 and 19, almost 20-year-old kid. And I got to know him really well. Got to know his parents, especially his father, because he was the cornerstone of the Magic. And we wanted to make sure that we were providing for him and taking care of him. And I would, on road trips, he's from Atlanta. And so whenever we go to Atlanta, I'd have lunch, not all the time, but a few times I'd have lunch with his father, just he and I. And he goes, hey, Mick, I really want, and he and I are the same age. So he would say, Mick, I really want you to kind of take a look, you know, take care of my son. Look, I go, I promise, his name is Dwight as well. I said, Dwight, I promise you, I'll take care of your son. I'll look after him. And we did. And not only that, at the same time, Doc Rivers was the head coach. He wanted me to, you know, keep an eye on him and, you know, get going because I'm going to be with him all the time. And I would have to go to Atlanta in the off season. So anybody else, your big name guys, you want to make sure they're doing, you want all your guys to do your programs. But Dwight was really important because, again, he was a cornerstone. So if he's either going to come into Orlando and train with me, or I am going to go to Atlanta and train him. So I had a lot of road trips to Atlanta. So I got to know him quite well. Had a couple of sit downs with the parents at their home, and then especially Dwight and I. And we contact each other every now and then now, the father. But I don't have any contact with Dwight anymore.
Well, I do know that you worked in the 90s. Who is the greatest player you've ever seen before your eyes?
Oh, boy. Oh, Shaq. Not on my teams, but
yeah.
For sure Shaq. I mean, it was
really?
Back in the day. I mean, when I was no longer with the Magic, and they were comparing Dwight with Shaq, I thought, oh my goodness, you got to be kidding me. You can't imagine
different body mass.
Shaq, if only he had a nice shot, especially with his free throws.
He liked that, didn't he?
Yeah, and I don't know. I really don't know why. I don't know if he just couldn't get the feel of it, or a lot of times when a big-time player has a coach like that, lots of times that coach won't tell the guy the truth. He won't, because he wants to be employed. He wants to be on his good side. And I've noticed that, you know, some of the coaches just aren't straight up. Say, hey, man, come on, you got to extend that arm all the way, follow through, and, you know, that's why they have their own personal coaches, some of them do.
And what are you currently reading?
I'm reading a book now called False Glories about Steve Corson, played for the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's about he's the first one that came up and talked about steroids. He was a big-time steroid user. He basically had to quit because he was going to kill himself. The steroids were going to kill him. And he actually turned it around. And he was like a whistleblower. But I'm not done with the book yet, but the bad thing is I know what happened to him in real life. You know, you want him to succeed and everything else, but he actually died in an accident. He was cutting down a tree, and his dog was with him. The dog went to, the tree was going to fall on his dog, and he went to go move the dog, and he got hit by the tree. But what an unbelievable story. And the neat thing is that back in the day, we're talking, you know, in the 80s, that's when I was at UM. And I remember some of the guys that are in his book, some of the ball players especially came for UM because we would train in the off season. And so it really kind of like, wow, you know, I can't believe that, you know, that's the guy and these are the guys he's talking about because I actually trained with them.
You were there during the glory days of UM.
Yeah, matter of fact, we have this October 20th, we have our 30th anniversary for the 87 National Championship team.
The U.
And that was, you talk about falling into place and being lucky.
The right time.
That was my first year at the University of Miami. Yeah.
You ran into Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I was very, very fortunate to be with unbelievable coaches. And I try to learn from them, good and bad from them. But one thing I've noticed is the best coaches that I have been around, they are the best managers of people. And they would get their best person that they can for that particular job and let them do their job. They better do their job or they're going to be gone. But Coach Ron Frazier was baseball, phenomenal manager, because at that time Brad Kelly was the associate head baseball coach. So Brad really ran the practices, and you would rarely see Coach Frazier at the practice. He'd be up in his big office overlooking everything, but he was always on the phone and doing, creating things and talking to people. He was like the promoter. He was the manager, the promoter. He made that like a pro baseball program. And then I had Chuck Daly with the NBA, who was a Hall of Famer. So
dream team.
I've always tell people how lucky I've been to be with basically three Hall of Fame coaches. Jimmy's not in Hall of Fame, but I consider a Hall of Fame coaches would be in three different sports. I've been able to coach with three different coaches, Hall of Fame coaches in three different sports. Yeah.
You haven't mentioned this, but you do have a book.
Yeah, I have a few books, but I haven't written one for a while. But I really do want to. I want to have a book that's my style of training. But when I was in the NBA, we have a few books, NBA conditioning.
Yeah, that one. Way. Which is still available on Amazon?
Yeah, or? Yeah, they're all there. We still have people that are actually buying them a little bit. they're really good books. Matter of fact, I opened one up the other day. We had the power rating. It was funny because we would compare what the vertical jump is with a certain ball player and what it would be for a junior high, a high school, college, and all that. And then we'd compare them to what that athlete would be in the NBA. NBA power rating is what it was called.
And yeah, it's funny you showed it to me because I actually Googled it and you're all over it.
Yeah.
So you provide private coaching, private classes. Can you tell their audience how they can reach you and what do you provide?
Yeah, well, what I do is right now, I have my youngest client is 14, and it's just general strength, general fitness for him. I actually train him and his mother. The mother is probably around early 40s, and it's more of a family thing. And again, for the mother, it's a little different than the boy. I get them different routines altogether, and I actually can go to their homes without my big truck. I have a bunch of bands and stability balls and medicine balls and things like that I can give them a good workout inside the home. Or if they want more of a full, complete gym, I have a huge truck that I actually pulled up, and you'll never know you're in a truck. I've got the surround sound system, the ceiling fans, the air conditioning, the mirrors, and all the equipment that you want to have. Depends on what you want and if you like to do that. And then also, I have a nice gym in my garage. It's a 2.5 stall garage. Again, it's not a garage. It's air conditioned, ceiling fans, surround sound TV, the best equipment that you can have. I have heavy duty equipment. It's not the home gym type stuff. This is, and you go in my gym, it looks like it's almost like a rehab center too, because I train a lot of older people. I have a lot of people that the older ones, I would say youngest older one is 64, and I go up to 83. I probably have 8 clients that are 64 to 83, which is, remember I told you about the NBA with the balance and proprioception and mobility? It's really funny because I train the older people, kind of like an athlete when they had surgery and they're coming back to like that transitional phase, and I that's how I train them, but I have to have more flexibility to start with, because if they haven't been moving and active, they lose their flexibility. So, well, you need to get them stronger, you need this, but you can't really get them stronger if they can't increase their range of motion. So you work on your range of motion, you work on a little bit of balancing, then you get them stronger. The next thing they know, those silly exercises that they think they're doing, they realize the importance of them. And it's funny because I would say once or twice a month, one of my clients will say, "Hey, Mick, you'll never guess what I did yesterday." I go, "What's that?" The woman would say, I was tripping when I got out of my house. I tripped down the stairs, and guess what happened?" I go, "What?" She goes, "I cut myself. I had the balance, and I didn't fall." I go, her name is Gay. I go, "Gay, that's exactly why we're doing this." And I remember one time, I was having her do just basic squats with hold on to a bar, and she goes, "Why am I doing this silly exercise?" I says, "Because you're going to get stronger. We need to have you work on your balance and the rehabilitation setups. You have the Blue Airex pad, which is very foamy, and I have them do movements without their shoes on, so their ankles and their hips and their knees will be a little stronger by just trying to do a movement or even standing on it, and that works. I have them work their forearms, their fingers. And why do they do that? Because if you happen to trip and fall, you're going to be able to hold on to something so you don't fall." So it's really, I feel like I'm an old strength coach, you know, back training the older people for prevention of injury. And they get stronger, more flexible. And the beauty of it is I know I'm making a big change in their life. I'm making a big impact. So especially, no longer am I going to have them jump 3-4 inches higher. It's like I want them to be able to control their body so they don't fall.
And they don't get hurt. Bills.
Oh, well, that's the thing too. Say, you know, because if they're going to fall, they're going to maybe hit the hip or the knee. It's going to be injured. And then the next thing is, can they get their hand up fast enough? If not, maybe they're going to hurt their wrist or their shoulder or maybe their face. So that prevention saves so much pain, time, effort, insurance, and they're happy. I get to see them, you know, 2 days later or whatever it is.
How can people reach you?
Well, I have a website at mickfit.com. They can go on there. I have my phone number. It's 305-896-3425. That's my personal phone. So it's, my business is, you know, everything that I do. So I'm pretty easy to get a hold of, really.
Thank you very much. One last random question. Would you rather give up listening to music or watching sports?
Oh, wow. Music or sports? Well, I'll tell you what. I love them both, and I'm definitely in the fitness business, but I would say I would have to keep my music. Music is every part of me. When I'm not working, or even when I'm still working as part of me, my leisure time is music. I'm around in my car, I'm in the home, I'm making a barbecue in my backyard. I'm a music guy.
And that's coming from a sports guy. Any closing words?
No, just don't wait for tomorrow what you can do today, especially when it comes to your health, because if you don't have your health, then just really try to do everything you can so you can enjoy the life that you have, you know, with your kids or things that you weren't able to do. If you get a little more fit, you'll be able to do it. And I love it when I'm with my young kids because I can do anything with them, and it's fun. It makes it more complete, more enjoyable.
Plus you feel good.
Oh yeah, I know I'm getting older, you know, but I can do pretty much everything that I used to be able to. Again, I'm not as fast. I'm not jumping anything like I used to, but I'm not dunking, but I am happy. And you know, anybody asks me to do something, I go, "Yeah, I'll do that. I'm gonna run a bike here for 10 miles or whatever it is." I don't do that, but I know I can do it. Like on a Sunday afternoon, you know, we've done it before, and I feel good. I remember when I was a student, they asked you what like the definition of health is, and the one that really got me the most was be able to do anything you want, and then have enough energy at the end of the day to get you out of an emergency situation.
Wow.
So you know what? That's pretty simple, but that makes a lot of sense. Be active as much as you want, but have enough gas in your tank. If your car breaks down and you have to go somewhere 3 miles or wherever it is, go up a hill, whatever you got to do, you know you can do that. You don't have to worry. There's a lot of people that can't get themselves out of an emergency situation. So it always stuck with me. It makes sense.
Mick, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much.
All right.
Appreciate it.
You bet.